on the 1 yard line with their backs against the wall.
This is a game to me. If you think it's a game, get the f*** off of this bus.
Hello, everybody. Welcome one, welcome all, and welcome back to the Believe in Iowa State podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Carter.
And I'm your host, Cody Vanciello.
Today, we have a special edition of the Believe in Iowa State podcast. We have Scott McFarland from the Bosco Boys podcast, K-State podcast. This is our Farmageddon game preview. So, Scott, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thank you, Tyler and Cody, for having me. It's always a great time to talk about college sports, and I think it's a great time to talk about, you know, the one of the best rivalries in college football. And I'll just say right now to Iowa State fans, get in Jamie Pollard's mentions, email him. Let's find a way to get this game back on the schedule for 2027. I don't want to see the series die out next year. I want the longest running, never interrupted rivalry in college football. I'm talking to Gene Taylor. I'm tweeting him. I'm talking to him any chance I get. So I'm asking my Iowa State friends, talk to Jamie Pollard. Let's try to make this happen. Get those two guys to go to Brett Yormark, redo the scheduling matrix so we can get this game back on the schedule for 2027.
Dude, I already put like 5 tweets out today. I'm like, I don't care if we have to put this game in Kansas City again and make it a neutral site game. Just make let this game happen, please.
Yeah.
So Go ahead.
Yeah, I've had like my fair interactions, and I've asked about like continuing like a farm again, and I think it's there. Like I've mentioned it repeatedly, but haven't heard much. But yeah, I've like mentioned just how much it means to both Kansas State and Iowa State, as like obviously with the move of Oklahoma and Texas to the SEC a couple years ago, you get rid of like that rivalry in itself, but also you've like have a little bit of rivalry, because I think me personally, I think Iowa State, we've been a thorn in Texas's side, like because we had won like quite a few of the last few games before they left for the SEC, and I think we had just started something there with the Longhorns before they left. So, and obviously one of our signature wins at Iowa State was that win over Oklahoma in Norman in 2017 with Kyle Kemp at quarterback.
Yeah, and not only that, but I think that just beyond that, I think that Brett Yormark and the Big 12, they need to protect more games. Again, only 4 games were protected when they did that. And when I had Gene Taylor on my show earlier this month, he said that I think the ADs recognize that, and they're looking at possibly redoing that and adding 2 protected games for everyone, or maybe just 1 for some schools. But I think that the door is cracked open a little bit. And if fans kind of rally around the idea of, hey, redo that schedule matrix, add more protected games, I think there's a chance that it could still happen for 2027. But I think Iowa State fans, K-State fans, and fans across the Big 12 need to be loud so their ADs hear that. Brett Yormark hears that. So maybe we can get that game back out there. And then maybe the Butt Bowl, Baylor and Texas Tech, they're not playing this year. I mean, come on. What is up with that? It's the first time, they're in the Southwest Conference before that. I have no idea the last time Baylor and Texas Tech didn't play. This needs to happen. So I'm shouting out. I'm talking to your guys' audience. Let's all be loud. Let's try to make this happen.
Clones fans, you heard it. Let your voice be known. Cats fans, let your voices be known. All right, Scott. So I wanted to get into both of our teams. We're going to start off with K-State. What has been the sentiment coming out of K-State's fall camp so far?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of optimism around K-State's camp. I think when you have Avery Johnson coming back, I think when you have, you know, Jaron Tibbs, Jaron Bradley, 2 transfer wide receivers that have received a lot of praise, as well as Jace Brown coming back. You know, I don't think we're going to have a duo of, you know, 1,000-yard wide receivers like you guys had last year, but K-State has not had a 1,000-yard receiver since 2014. I think this is the year that we're going to see that. I think Avery Johnson takes a step, and I'm feeling really good about, you know, the defense. I think Austin Romaine, could be an All-American type linebacker. You have a whole group of edge rushers that are just looking at trying to be the next guy, that next K-State player to win Defensive Lineman of the Year, an award that has lived in Manhattan over the course of the conference ever since it was introduced. I think K-State has six or seven guys who have won that award since the award was introduced. So they're all trying to be that guy. And I think there's a lot of optimism. I think there's a lot of excitement. And being ranked at 17th in the preseason AP poll and number 20 in the coaches poll, I think that the expectations are high. The excitement's high in Manhattan, Kansas right now.
Nice. Very, very nice. Yeah. I mean, the same thing for us. Obviously, you heard at Big 12 Media Days that this Iowa State team is hungry. They got embarrassed in last year's Big 12 title game, and just the spirit of competition and the depth that this team has coming out of fall camp, especially with our tight end room, especially with Ben Bramer returning to the fold, as well as Gabe Burkle, and some of our young receivers showing out, such as Dom Overby and Brett Eskildsen, along with our guys from the portal, Chase Sewell and Xavier Townsend. But Cody, if you want to add anything, that'd be great.
Yeah. Yeah, with that, obviously, the big question for Iowa State was, how are you going to replace the production of two NFL or second-round picks? Now, I don't think we're going to see anything like that again. We're not going to get, like, 2,000-yard receivers, like, anytime soon. That's, like, once-in-a-generational type of thing. But I think there are guys that are capable of giving similar production and maybe spreading out the ball a little more was key. Because I believe I saw a stat somewhere. It was, like, what, about 60% of the yards by any receivers were to Noel and Higgins. So right. I think spreading out the ball is going to be key for Iowa State to have, like, more viable receivers. And I think also we've been seeing some stuff out of Abu Sama. Obviously, mm-hmm. He had a bit of a down year.
You said the name. I'm logging out. I mean, what, like 80% of his career yards happened in the snow in Manhattan, Kansas in 2023? Thanks for having me. Find me at Bob.
So mm-hmm. Maybe like that would be something to throw in the wrinkle for Abu, and obviously improve from what was a down year. So maybe seeing him like more like run out into the slot, kind of like where Jalen Noel was, and kind of being like a fourth receiver for Rocco Beck, maybe for short yardage gains. And maybe like since Ben Bramer is going to be more of like a guy you can throw like a vertical like middle route over, Abu could potentially be like kind of a check down guy that can get you like a quick like 6-7 yards.
Yeah, and I just think overall that will help Rocco become a better quarterback. He's not relying on Higgins and Noel to get him out of trouble. Obviously, he had like a 59% completion percentage, but with the tight ends, I think they could probably get up to like maybe like 64-65%. Let's move to like what we're going to talk about, like now season success. Like, Scott, what is it going to take? Because obviously the last two seasons, K-State at the beginning of the year has been at least preseason favorites to win the conference, and you guys have fallen short of that. But what is it going to take for K-State to finally reach their potential and actually win a Big 12 title again?
Yeah, so again, I think because of the high expectations last 2 years, folks – forget like, hey, we beat an undefeated TCU team in 2022. Right. So it's only been, this will be the third season since we last won the Big 12 title. So while it feels like it was a while ago because of how high the expectations and falling short the last 2 years, I do think K-State fans and Big 12 fans kind of as a whole forget like, hey, it hasn't been that long since it was Chris Klieman hoisting that trophy up. But I do think that that's what you need to do for this season to be a success. I think you need to get back to Arlington that first Saturday in December. Now, with the Big 12, nine games, balanced schedules, I think that if you go and you miss out on Arlington due to tiebreaker roulette, fans will be upset, fans will be sad, fans will be mad, but I don't think anyone is going to say, hey, it was a failed season because you miss out on Arlington because of tiebreakers. Now, if K-State were to go 9-3, I think you would see some fans that were just saying, hey, this isn't enough. I'm not one of those people. Again, if you're going to be in and around the top 25 the entire year. Like, you know, last year just missed out on the postseason AP poll by a few votes. If you go 9-3 this year with what I think when it's all said and done, I think you're going to have a handful of ranked teams on that schedule. I'll feel disappointed. I don't know if I'd go as far as saying the season was a failure, but I would not be saying like, all right, hey, something drastic needs to change. But I do think that there are some of those folks in Manhattan, in the K-State fan base, that would say, all right, you went 9-3 with this roster. Something has to change, whether it's coordinators, whether it's position coaches. I do think that K-State fans are at a period that with this expectation, with the perceived value of this roster, if you don't make it to Arlington or if you don't have a 10-2 regular season, there's going to be some fans who want blood spilled over that. And I think that's a dangerous world to live in. That's very high expectations. But I do think Chris Klieman has earned that reputation of being a guy who's going to be around the Big 12 race. And I think fans are like, all right, this is the third year since we were last in Arlington. It's time to get back there. So I think those are realistic. I think it is realistic to hope, expect, predict K-State to get there. But at the end of the day, I do think there are a lot of teams with those same hopes and expectations, and you could realistically predict to be in that game. That's why having those expectations could be a dangerous game.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, we know that, like, We're basically in the same situation as 2021, to where we're coming off of an appearance, and I know, like, at least in our fan base, they're like, man, please don't let this season be like 2021, to where we had these expectations of trying to make it back to the title game, but we went 7-6. But I just think, you know, I had one of the Cyclone insiders on, and they believe that the Cyclones are ready to make that step again. They should take that step. And I actually think that this team that the Cyclones have is actually more better prepared to take on that challenge and embrace expectations of making it back to another Big 12 title game.
Can I ask you guys a question? Because this is something we've talked about on my podcast.
Yeah.
I don't think that there is a team that is, when you look at computer models, advanced analytics, and kind of those projections versus human polls, human, you know, power rankings, all that type of stuff. I don't think that there is a team maybe in the country that is more divided than Iowa State. I think almost every computer model, except for, I think most of them have Iowa State, you know, finishing in the upper middle class of the Big 12. But if you look at power rankings, if you look at AP voters, if you look at coaches' poll, I think the unofficial straw poll amongst the coaches at the Big 12 championship or at Big 12 Media Days had Iowa State in the mix or in the game. So what do you think the difference is between like what some of the, you know, models are looking at and versus what some of the humans and eye tests are looking at? Where's the disconnect?
I think a lot of people are reading a lot into the, I'll say the departure of Jaden Higgins and Jalen Knoll. I think a lot of people were looking into that, like, just because even in from a national perspective, I've listened to a lot of national podcasts. A lot of people will automatically think that we're going to take a step back because of that. Yeah, now, yes, that is going to be a lot of production that's going to be lost there. And obviously we had some players on defense that are going to be going to the drafts as well. But I think it's just because of mainly the Higgins and Knoll departure. I think that's the reason why. And Cody, if you want to add your thoughts, that'd be great too.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the same. So, yeah, just with the departure of major production, that's going to definitely skew like what people like expect you to be. Now, I think with that being said, and obviously I think another thing was the D line. I think people looked at like how, like, the thing was, we still had like one of the best defenses in like in the Big 12 overall, even with all the injuries we had at the linebacker position. We were playing literal like walk-on freshmen at one point. So I think it was just like the computers aren't looking at like the kind of the situation that you're given and like kind of look at the way Iowa State is coached and how they prepare their guys for being on the field. And that's a job given to John Haycock and the rest of the coaching staff over at Iowa State. That's one thing I think the coaches poll sees that's different from the computer, because computer, you can only like do so much that like takes like actual like data and numbers that you see like put in. But with the human factor, you get to actually like talk and interact with these coaches. And obviously, a lot of praise has been given to Matt Campbell and the way his continuity has been at Iowa State. I mean, even Kenny Dillingham, Kenny Dillingham, to me, from Arizona State, and Campbell are they coach in the same way. And actually, remember, a while ago, I think it was mentioned that Kenny Dillingham once shadowed Matt Campbell at one of Iowa State's fall camps a while ago when Matt Campbell was still starting out at Iowa State. And Kenny Dillingham took a lot from that and was inspired to agree from Matt Campbell. So it's just the way that Matt Campbell coaches his guys and the way that coaching is done at Iowa State that I think the disconnect is there, because the high praise that's being given to Matt Campbell the way he does things at Iowa State.
Yeah. And I will, so I think that's to answer your, hopefully that answers your question.
No, it definitely does. Again, it's interesting when you see the gap between, where some of the, computer models and the human models are, because again, I think that's one of the more drastic ones. I don't think that there's a lot of computer darlings that aren't anywhere near their rankings. And I would say it's kind of the inverse of that. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And again, to Cody's point, it's just data. You can't put an eye test into, a model and spit it out. But it'll be interesting to see, how things progress. And, if I were in your guys' shoes, if Iowa State gets off to another hot start, I'd be, going at some of these, computer models, going after Bill Conley, but saying, hey, you don't know ball, put those computers in the locker room and say, hey, football's supposed to be watched with your eyes instead of the computers. If Iowa State gets off to a hot start, that's what I'd be doing if I were, Cardinal and gold.
We always get overlooked. We were chirping last year when we started off 7-0. So you better believe that we will be saying something. But yeah, what were we gonna say, Cody?
Yeah, it's I think that's the thing. Iowa State, they thrive. They tend to thrive when it comes to that situation. And I mean, the road for
you guys,
Iowa State,
wish the coaches and AP poll would have been like, oh no, you can receive a few votes, we're not going to put you in the top 25. You guys kind of wish that was the case then?
No, I think it's about I think we're getting the recognition that has been rightfully earned by Iowa State. And I think we're gunning for more, as a fan and obviously as the team, because this team knows that they can get they can go even higher. Cause even with the historic season that we had, we still felt like there was something left on the table. So I think that's just the mentality we're going to have is we're just going to keep going. We're going to continue being the best versions of ourselves that we can be. That's been a mantra for Campbell since day one. And that's what he's always been preparing for. And I think this year it's no different. You're coming off a great year, but you got to show you consistently do so. And I think this year will be a great opportunity considering the schedule that Iowa State has ahead of them, not just with obviously starting out in Ireland against Kansas State, but you talk about a couple home games, homecoming against BYU. We don't know what BYU is going to be like given that they have a new quarterback, but they were just outside the top 25 in the AP poll. And then you get the top dog in the Big 12, at least preseason wise, Arizona State. Those two games are going to be important. We're going to see what Colorado looks like in the post-Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders era. Obviously, you got Cy-Hawk, which I think Iowa fans are, from what I'm hearing, is, sounding to be a much better, offensively, given that they're hyping up Mark Gronowski. But now,
here's something for your guys' listeners. I know someone who works in the Iowa athletic department. I'm not going to say their name. I'm not going to dox them. He was at their live scrimmage, ones versus ones, twos versus twos over the weekend. He says that Iowa's offense not going to be anywhere near what folks think it is. It's going to look a lot more like last year and all these previous years. And apparently this quarterback that they brought in, this transfer that they brought in that everyone's trying to talk up, they're like, he couldn't even field a snap. Turned the ball over four times in a live scrimmage and only played 2.5 quarters. So
I think I saw a clip of him fumbling the snap, and then we also saw a clip of him people were hyping up him throwing a deep ball against their defense.
If Iowa State scores 24 versus the Hawkeyes, I think it's going to be a second straight win for Iowa State.
I agree. I completely agree.
And I think Iowa's going to score maybe 19 points a game. I don't think their offense is fixed at all. And then if it ends up, if it ends up being good, I was just trying to pander to your fans, you know, so everyone be nice to me. But I don't think Iowa's offense is going to be any good. I think you guys are.
I don't either.
I think when it's all said and done, I think that Iowa game maybe will be the sixth or seventh toughest game on your guys' schedule.
Yeah. There are some games that, I mean, we're seeing here that, like, I'm really curious. Like, obviously, I know you're familiar with this one, Kansas. It's been 4 years since we beat the Jayhawks. They've had our number the last three times in a row.
It's so weird, especially. So I live in Kansas City here, right? And there's a lot of Cyclones down here. And Sports Talk Radio talks about how Lance Leipold owns Matt Campbell. Matt Campbell has seemed to have Chris Kleiman's number, and Chris Kleiman's undefeated against Lance Leipold and KU.
Yes.
So it's like this little triangle of teams that, and we've seen, you go back to like maybe 95, 96, like before you guys were even born, these teams were all like pretty good. But since then, there's never been a time where all three of these programs had an actual pulse. So the fact that all three schools, are looking at and saying like KU, they expect to get back to a bowl game. K-State and Iowa State, they're saying, hey, could this open up the season and then end it? Could it be Ireland and Arlington? Mm-hmm. I think you have to go back to the mid-90s to see all three programs have this level of expectation. I think it comes back to the three coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they're similar. Oh, go ahead, Cody.
Yeah, they're all similar in the way they coach the teams. And I've actually been in, like, obviously I don't like when we lose to Kansas, but Lance Leipold has done such a great job with the Jayhawks. I mean, I'm curious to see what, like, your thought is, like, because I think Kansas was right there with you guys in the Sunflower State Showdown, Bill Snyder. So I think that shows that maybe Kansas is closing the gap on Kansas State a little bit. They've obviously done it to us, but where do you think, where the Jayhawks will be in relation to the rest of the Big 12? Because I think, I don't know, Kansas, I mean, with Jalen Daniels back at the helm, who knows what they could be doing, and maybe they can finally crack like another like accomplishment.
Yeah, so I come from a house divided. My younger brother is a KU football season ticket holder. My mom was the baby Jayhawk mascot. And my dad was a second generation K-State graduate. I'm a third generation K-State graduate. So it truly is like the quintessential house divided. So I like to think I have a more measured view of KU than a lot of K-State fans do. And look, they want to say that they've like closed the gap and all this type of stuff. And I rewatched the game from 2024, and all the media like to point to a couple mistakes KU made. Well, K-State mm-hmm. was very close to blowing that game out early in the third quarter if Avery Johnson doesn't have a turnover, an unforced turnover, fumbled the ball with no one around him. So I don't think that the gap is as close as KU fans want to say it is. But here's the thing. It's not an automatic win. You know, when I was in college, it was, okay, is K-State going to win by 40 or 25? Like, it wasn't can KU win it. It was, how big will K-State win by? That is not the case anymore. I think it'll be a good game. And look, I hope a lot of my K-State friends aren't watching. Actually, I do. I want all of my listeners to listen to you guys. But they're playing Missouri. I would like to see them beat Missouri. I will not be cheering for Missouri to beat KU. I hate Missouri. You know, I went to Columbia when we played them a couple years ago, and they needed a 63-yard kick to beat us.
Thicker kicker.
Yeah, I have no love for Missouri, but I don't think KU is going to win that game. I think KU is going to have a tough time with their defense. I think it's going to be a low scoring game. I think Missouri wins that, but I think they should win their two non-conference games. And I think they're going to be either 4-5 or 5-4 in Big 12 play. And I think they will get back to a bowl game. Right. Now, here's the thing. If they don't, say they go 2-1 in the non-con, and say they only go 3-6 in Big 12 play, I do think it's time that the national media has to have a conversation about Lance Leipold, because they love putting him in the top 15 in these coaching rankings. I think you have to have a real conversation of like, yes, he is a good coach. He is. Being able to have KU to have a pulse, one of the worst programs in a modern college football history, he deserves some credit, but he's not an elite coach if then he has another losing season. And I do think Jalen Daniels, you mentioned him earlier, he played in all 12 games last year. If he plays in all 12 this year, even if he gets hurt and they don't get back to a bowl game, I think that diminishes his legacy at KU when at a time, KU fans probably looked at him as a possible Ring of Honor type guy. University of Kansas Hall of Famer type guy. If he can't get them to at least 7 wins, I don't think he can put that sort of, you know, mantra around him. So I think it's a big legacy season for our friends in Lawrence.
Yeah, that the border war is definitely something I'm going to be looking towards. And I think for us, at least, Tyler, here in for Iowa State, that's going to be right after the Cyhawk game. So that's going to be a perfect segue for us Cyclones. And who does Kansas State play in that weekend? Do you know?
So we play you guys in week 0. We come back and play North Dakota, the Hawks, and then the Army midshipmen. Oh man,
the Army Golden Black Knights.
Oh man, and I was just on an Army. Oh no, I hope they're definitely not listening. So we play Army in week 2, and then we play Arizona as a non-conference game on a Friday night in Arizona in week 3 for our 4th game before our bye week. So. It's going to be a tricky look. I'm hoping K-State wins, right? Like, obviously, I'm not going to sugarcoat just because I'm on an Iowa State podcast.
Of course, we want to win.
I'm going to predict us to win, but if you win that, you come back. North Dakota, again, it's a spicy enough team. I mean, you guys only put 21 on them last year.
Yeah, they play a ball control type of offense. So.
They are a capable enough team to give you some headaches, and then you have to turn around and play Army, and then on a short week going to the desert. I think Arizona's going to be horrible. I think they're looking at like 3-9, 4-8 type of season. It's a Friday night game, PM Central time. It's going to be in the desert. It's going to be a hot game. Again, it's going to be a difficult first 4 games for K-State to navigate. And again, as a K-State fan, if you can get to 4-0 before that first bye week, I can't tell you guys, I'm going to just delete a 12-pack of Manhattan Brewing Company beer and kick my feet up, watch college football on that week 4 as K-State's on a bye week 4-0. Oh, it would be the best feeling in the world. But at the same time, we could be 2-2 and I could be hating my life and not watching a single second of college football. So it's going to be an interesting first 4 weeks to navigate.
Yeah, no, it's the same thing with us. It's the same thing with us. Cody, I'll let you go after. But man, yeah, it's the same thing with us. If we start out 4-0, then I'm gonna be in my irrational thoughts. I'm like, man, maybe we could go start off 7-0 again, 8-9-0.
Honestly, like, there might be a world where somehow, some way, looking at Iowa State schedule, we start 4-0. I'm looking at it here. I cannot see us losing a game. Like, if we start out like 4-0, and if we're rolling really well, I could realistically see us not lose a game until either Arizona State at home or at TCU.
Why the hell are you guys going to Jonesboro, Arkansas, though?
You have to ask our athletic director. I don't know why we have.
I don't like Jamie Pollard. Look, I think Jamie Pollard sucks. I think he's weird. I've heard stuff about some of the things he's done at, you know, some of the Big 12 meetings. I have respect for Matt Campbell. I think TJ Otzelberger, if he could just get a shirt that fit, I probably would like him fine. I don't like him. I think he is weird. I think you guys need to get rid of him. Get someone else in there. He's way too obsessed with this Cy-Town stuff. Focus on your athletic department. Do some stuff with the coaches. Build the rep. Don't worry about that. He needs to go. Jamie Pollard needs to go. Dude. I'm sorry.
If you were to ask all the Iowa State fans, you would have a legit 50-50 when it comes to like their thoughts on Jamie Pollard. And the one thing that, I got to credit Scott Reister out of KCCI. He recently did an interview with Jamie Pollard on like the Ireland experience. And one of the quotes that was that Jamie Pollard mentioned was how much fun the fans are going to have at the Guinness Factory. And the one thing that many Iowa State fans, including myself, have been harping Jamie Pollard on is the fact that you are not selling alcoholic beverages at either Jack Trice Stadium or Hilton Coliseum outside of the big donor families. And what's ridiculous, like, it's not even the money itself. Forget the money thing. It's the principle that I said. Because what's the point of letting all your fans, the regular fans or so, go out and get crazily, like, down alcohol, like we're going to the Guinness Factory, but you can't even do that. We can't even do that in our own stadium unless we fork up like $10 so I can go sit in the end zone club and sit in a nice AC unit when I don't know, maybe I just want to have a cold one like when my buddy's sitting in the student section. It's ridiculous. And
I'm right there with you. So Gene Taylor has a very high approval rating with K-State fans. But we're not doing it for football. Weirdly enough, every other sporting event you can that is ticketed, you can. So basketball, men's and women's, you can have beer. Baseball, you can have a beer. Volleyball, soccer, women's soccer, literally everything except for football. So K-State fans, like, some of them have a similar thought when it comes to that. But Gene Taylor does have a little bit higher approval rating with everything else. But I think it is wild. So I think K-State, Iowa State, BYU, and Baylor, I believe, are the only four schools in the Big 12 that do not sell beer. And not saying anything about Baylor and BYU as institutions, but something doesn't match when you're comparing K-State and Iowa State to Baylor and BYU. There's some missing link that I can't quite put my finger on. So
You mentioned volleyball and the basketball, dude. I don't know how much fun I'd have if, like, because I love volleyball. So that's like one of my favorite sports out of like the main, like, football and basketball is volleyball. That's a very fun, like, sport. I would love to just kick it with the buddies and we just like have a beer while watching volleyball. That would make it fun.
You know how chill that would be.
Yeah, dude, and volleyball's been, it's really fun, and I'm glad, like, that's, like, been getting more in the up and up, like, obviously, with the likes of Nebraska, Penn State, and Wisconsin, and I think...
Dude, K-State just opened up an elite volleyball-only facility, so it's, like, 3,000 seats. I've yet to get in there, but my guys, when they opened it the first season, they swept Texas 2 games, they swept BYU 2 games. It is an elite atmosphere, and I still haven't been in. Like, the first season, it sold out every single game. They sold out, I think, 80% of the games. Volleyball, like, oh, man, I think it's the most athletic women in college sports play volleyball. It is insane to see what they're able to do.
Yeah, and I'm so glad, like, I've, like, been watching them lately, because, like, I know a lot of players, like, on the volleyball team, and I get to know them, because, like, they're not, like, as, like, exclusive as, like, football and basketball. And
they're actually going to class. You know, they're not doing all their classes online, so.
Yeah, and I've ran into them, like, on campus, like, just ever so randomly, and I'll just talk to them, like, I'll just, like, ask them, like, how they're going, like, how the games are going, whatever, and, yeah. I mean, we're getting Farmageddon in volleyball as well, because, like, we have to go there October 8th, Morgan Family Arena, that, and you guys are doing a promotion called Morgan After Dark, so I'm curious, like, I'm waiting to see what that looks like.
I think they're giving out some glow-in-the-dark shirts to the student section, I believe.
So yeah, I'm going to definitely tune into that. But yeah, just like kind of twirling back to football. Yeah, it's kind of crazy how at least with like Gene Taylor, he lets you guys have it anywhere but football, basketball, which probably I really think that should be something, I don't know, our athletics should do is put it into like sports that maybe aren't like football, because like we could still like tailgate like crazy. Like, and the thing is with us, we drink Busch Light like it's water. I've seen it. We even have a whole holiday in Ames dedicated to drinking like crazy. As a student, we have this holiday called 801 Day. So basically, the Saturday before classes start at the beginning of every fall semester, we have a rager because there's a rule where fraternities and sororities at the university cannot like have alcoholic beverages in the frat and sorority houses until after 8 a.m. the Saturday before class starts. So basically, 801 a.m. hits, it's on. It's an all-day rager. And the fact that we're also getting a football game to go on top, I expect Welch Avenue in Ames, Iowa to just be one massive block party. And whether we win that game or lose the game, I prefer the win, of course. We're just gonna drink our city dry. And we might even drink like the local areas dry.
Yeah. With that being said, let's get into that. Let's talk about our three keys.
That's my fault. Anytime I go on a show, I always derail everything. So hey, I apologize.
Scott. It was great. It was great conversation. I don't mind it at all.
I love that when we could just like go off topic a little bit here and there.
You can go off topic a little bit. It's good. It means it's natural. I love it. But like Scott, for you, what are three things that are that you're looking for, or I guess three keys that will have K-State get the victory in Dublin?
Number one with a bullet is win the turnover margin. Again, the very first play last year in Ames, it's a turnover. It's wild. So if you look at Pro Football Focus, Rocco Becht, I believe, was in the top 15 of turnover-worthy plays last year, but I think he only turned the ball over 9 or 10 times total on the season. And Avery Johnson, you know, he had 10 interceptions and a couple fumbles. he didn't make any other turnover worthy plays on the year. He had the worst luck. If a defender got his hands on the ball, they got the interception or they got the fumble recovery. And that's the exact opposite of what happened in Ames. You know, K-State had a couple times where they got hands on the ball, but it fluttered, hit the ground. There was no one there to grab that interception. They weren't there to grab, you know, a fumble on the ground. So if K-State can win the turnover battle, mm-hmm. I'm going to feel really good. Again, I sound like a boomer saying this, but then also field position. Like K-State last year was the worst year in the Chris Kleiman era when you want to look at net field position. Our opponents had close to 20 yards better field position game in, game out. Put your offense and defense behind the eight ball there. So some of that is not getting the turnover. Some of it was turning the ball over. And then you didn't do great, you know, in the return game. You didn't do great in the coverage game. So it's going to be, can you win the turnover battle? And then can someone step up and be that hero? Can someone step up and make mm-hmm. that play, whether it's on defense, whether it's on offense? You need someone to be that star player that when the game is on the line, because the game will be on the line outside of 2020, yeah. Almost every game K-State and Iowa State have played for the last two decades, it has been like a one-score game most 10 points outside of 2020. That season doesn't count. Everyone had COVID. Like, I don't even recognize that year. Did it happen? I don't think that season even happened. So if you throw that game out, it's such a tight game, and it really comes down to, like last year, we could not find – Avery Johnson could not make that play when the game mm-hmm. was on the line. The defense couldn't get that one more stop or that turnover. So can that happen? And again, that's so cliche. All three of those are cliches, and I'd like to be smarter. I'd like to be a better, you know, more in-depth football fan. But I really think in a game like this, it's going to come down to who wins the turnover battle, who wins the field position battle, and who's going to have that guy, that star player who just says, mm-hmm. no, over my dead body and make the big play. So I really think those are the three keys for K-State.
Yeah, that's great, Scott. Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, it might be cliche, but that's exactly what it is. I think just for us coming into this game, like we've won five out of the last seven matchups, and I think for us in this game, I think is to continue what we've been doing in this game. I'd say number one for me is being good in all three phases of football and being offense, defense, special teams. So when we were able to get that turnover, we went down the field and scored a touchdown off of that short field. So all three phases intertwining with one another. Second, I will say we need to get a pass rush this year. We only had 16 sacks in 13 games as a unit last year. I think for us that we're trying to get more of a pass rush this year. That's one of the concerns I had coming in for the Cyclones. I think we will get better at that. With this, also being better at stopping the run. Luckily, in last year's game, we had enough of a cushion, but if that was more of a closer game, you guys were killing us on the ground in that game. Luckily, we still had a good enough lead, but luckily, we have this game in hand. Otherwise, we would have been getting killed by them right now. But and then third, I'd say make plays. We've made plays in these games, you know, and at least in the close games department, at least I'll say from 2021 to 2023, I believe we were like 2-12 at one score games. And I believe it's ever since 2023, Iowa State's like, I believe 6-2 or 7-2 at one score games. So just somebody stepping up when your number is called. So those are my three keys. Cody, yeah. What are yours?
I think I'm going to share similar ones with you, Tyler. Like, obviously, all three phases and special teams. Special teams I really wanted to highlight because there was, like, a play. I think it was early. Like, it was in the third quarter where Kansas mm-hmm. State was on the one-yard line. They went to kick a field goal to, I believe, was tie the game or something. And Derek Porter just comes jumping off the edge and blocks a game-tying field goal. And you can tell that got the crowd into it. That, like, was momentum for Iowa State. And that's, like, one of the crucial things, like, with special teams because, like, and then, like, that kind of intertwines to make it plays. Because that play right there really gave Iowa State, like, some momentum. They eventually, like, got a safety and another field goal, which was basically the cushion. That's all they needed. So those are the plays they needed. But, yeah, plays like that can get, like, and obviously this game's a neutral site, but for the team as well, just for the confidence, right, is going to be key. And then the pass rush. Yeah, that's the big thing I want to see. Mm-hmm. I want like to see like for Dom Orange, I want him to just be able to just eat up the middle and really not give the running backs any sort of like space, but also the help from the edge like Ike, and maybe bring down a linebacker, either Caleb Bacon or Cale Brazina. Because we know like Iowa State linebackers can come down and play like, on this defensive end type of position. So that'll be nice to see. And then offensively, I think you just got to spread the ball around, like finding guys, like, yeah, find, like, spread the wealth. And I'm going to mention it one more time, Abu Salma. I won't be surprised if somehow, some way, Abu Salma just carves you guys up.
That would be funny.
I'm real funny for you guys, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, at least, at least I don't have to worry about some idiot on Twitter, like, wanting to shove something up their sphincter, like that one dude for the BYU game.
God, no stupid bets, please. What?
Yeah, that was bad.
I don't know, what was your reaction to, like, seeing that tweet come all over the place?
It didn't come across my lexicon until I was all the way up in Utah, so I was at that game. So, like, I wasn't even aware of it. And then I think I saw it, like, on K-State's On3 website, or I was just like, whatever. Like, and I thought things were going to go well. And honestly, it was going, like, again, K-State had some issues in the red zone last year. It should have been 14-0, and, you know, the crowd, you know, goes away. But when you settle for three, especially on the road, all it takes is one big play from the home team. And then all of a sudden, the game flips on its head. And again, the first 26 minutes of that game, K-State dominated. They just settled for field goals instead of touchdowns, and then a couple of mistakes here or there, and then all of a sudden, before you realize it, before you even understand what's going on, you're down by 20. So you know, it was not a fun trip up to Provo, Utah.
Yeah,
and at least I didn't have to put a Taco Bell item up my rear end, though. So.
Yeah, that was brutal.
That was brutal. Like, oh my god. Yeah, right. I'm not making any of those times.
Yeah, we can.
We'll edit there. We're gonna edit there.
We're gonna end it there. We're not gonna go deeper. All right, Scott. What is your score prediction in this game?
Yeah, I mean it's tough. It's tough, right? If I wanted to like go with what you know, realistically. I think it's going to look somewhere around like a 27-31, 27-24, 28-27, like something in there. I think it's going to be, you know, just gut-wrenching hell. But you know what? What fun is that? I'm gonna say 31-20 because, ooh, you know, whatever.
Okay.
So K-State wins. I'll say that we hit a field goal to ice it with like 2.5 minutes, and then Rocco throws an interception as he's trying to, you know, get a touchdown and onside kick. He throws an interception inside the red zone with 45 seconds. Then K-State kneels the ball out because, you know what? What fun is being a fan if you're only going to predict your team to win by one? So I'll have us win by 11.
All right. My prediction is we're down in the fourth quarter. Rocco leads another game-winning drive. We win. Or we go up 31-28, and then Avery throws an interception to Jontez. And we win 31-28.
Hey, have it go back for a pick six. No, win by two possessions.
What? That's exactly what I was going to say. That was what I was going to do.
I think we all know that it's going to probably be a one score game. But again, what fun is being a fan? We're not objective journalists.
Okay,
might as well pick your team to win by two possessions.
You know what? For me, I just see us going there and like seeing Kansas State, and I just think we're going to have a field day with that secondary. Rocco Beck airs it up to our wide receivers and our tight end. We're gonna eat up that secondary, and then as you guys try to like cover that up, we'll just have Abu and Carson Hanson run all over you guys. We're just gonna, you know what? 42-28. How about that?
There you go. Ooh. There's some zeal. Yeah. There's some zeal. You know what?
We're gonna win 41-20, baby. Let's go.
Okay, there we go. What have I done? What have I done? What have I done?
Yeah. Okay. So one thing I want to talk like before we end here, I just want to take a look at the AP poll. Like, you got a chance to look at it, Scott? So
yep, I have. I've taken a look at it. I can pull it up just in case you're asking me some deep cut questions.
I'll just pull it up. I got it. So real, like, anything on there that like looks crazy, like anything that's outstanding to you, any team that you wish was like placed differently? Because I generally found this one to be okay, but it's weird just to see how much love Clemson, like, they got a lot of love, and I'm guessing that comes down to like Cade Klubnik, but also with the Big 12 teams, you see Arizona State getting a lot of hype, and then you get the mosh pit of Big 12 with the Kansas State, and then you get Iowa State, Texas Tech. For all the talk that Texas Tech got, like with the amount of money they spent, it's really interesting that they are like just below Iowa State.
Yeah, Texas Tech, it really one has to second. Be. If they don't get sorry to Arlington this year, when are they ever going to?
Can you hear me, Scott?
Oh, yep, I still got you. Yep.
Okay.
You have me?
We got you.
Okay, perfect.
Yep, we got you.
So, yeah, I think Texas Tech, it's like now or never for them. Like, I feel like you're making your big splash. You have to do something there. I'm a little surprised/confused why BYU is still getting so many votes and those other receiving votes. But, I mean, BYU, Utah, Baylor all being there 26, 27, 28 unofficially. It doesn't surprise me that there is this kind of big conglomeration of Big 12 teams around that spot. I'll say this. I don't understand Arizona State at 11. Again, when you look at the stats, right, when you look at Cam Scadaboo, he accounted for like 40% of the touchdowns, like 80% of the rushing. I don't know if that's actually true, but he even had 40% or 38% of the receiving yards. I think Arizona State can be good. I think they'll be fine. I think they'll be contenders for Arlington, but I think the narrative is getting a little bit out in front of the skis. They're not whoever your number one or number two Big 12 team is, whoever it is, you can choose whoever you want. There is not a 9 position gap between whoever you think is number one and whoever you think is number two. There's not a 6 person gap between number one and number two. If you think Arizona State truly is the number 11 team in the country, I think you need to have K-State, Texas Tech, Baylor, and Utah. I think all of those teams need to be a lot closer to where Arizona State is. I don't buy into this Illinois hype at all. I think Illinois, if you put them in the Big 12, I think they're a upper middle class team. I don't think they're that good at all. I think Indiana being a top 20 team, I think that's a crime against humanity. Whoever voted for Oklahoma in the AP poll, just get out of here. That is the – I usually like the AP poll a lot more than the coaches poll. The fact they're a top 20 team, that is absolutely disgusting. They have no business being up there. Ultimately, I don't have an issue with the top 10. I think Clemson's going to be good. Miami's the only team I take a little bit of an exception with. I think Illinois, I don't think they're going to be any good. I don't think South Carolina is going to be any good. I don't think Michigan's going to be any good. I don't think Florida is going to be any good. I don't think SMU is going to be any good. Really, have Arizona State at 11, have K-State at 12, Iowa State at 13, Texas Tech at 14, Baylor at 15, and Utah at 16. Like, I truly do believe that. So those are my initial takeaways with the AP poll.
Yeah. The Oklahoma thing kind of soured me because I'm like, they went 6-6. Yeah, they beat Alabama. Alabama went 93. Are you saying that there's not as big of a gap? And Ole Miss is not as good of a team as Oklahoma, Texas A&M.
AP voters are just thinking about the sorority girls down at the Grove at Ole Miss.
Exactly.
That's what they're voting
for. Kiffin's daughter. Kiffin's daughter.
They're like, all right, we're voting for, you know, Lane Kiffin. He's funny on Twitter, and there's a bunch of hot girls who go to Ole Miss.
I mean, Russ Talk is back. I mean, we're getting all the recruitments. It's recruitment season for all these, like, Greek organizations. Like, it's recruitment season right now for our fraternities and sorority, like fraternity brothers and sorority sisters. So, you know, these people were definitely looking all over like, the internet for one reason or another.
That's true. All right. Well, I think we're going to wrap it up today. Scott, thank you so much for joining. Can you just, before you go, can you just tell us, tell our viewers and people, even K-Staters maybe who haven't tuned into you, where you can find you?
Yeah, at Bosco's Boys on X/Twitter, whatever you want to call it. That's the only spot where we're active on social media. We've been doing 5 episodes a week. Started that back in June. This is our 9th football season. We've had at least one episode every single week for over 8 years. I mean, honestly, time flies. I might have that wrong. It might be 7 or 8 years. I don't know. We just went over 1,000 episodes all time. You can find us on all the podcast apps. I'm not nearly as handsome as Tyler or Cody, so I don't put my stuff on YouTube. So it's audio only for my show.
Yeah.
I had Alec Bussey of your guys' 247 site on.
Yeah.
Earlier this summer to do a Behind the Enemy Lines episode. He's going to be on a pre-recorded episode I did with him and that'll drop on Friday before Farmageddon over in Ireland. So that Friday before kickoff, he'll be on again. Alec Bussey, great guy. He does great work for you guys. He covered K-State for a year in 2022. And I'm a big fan of his work. He knows football inside and out. So that's going to be coming next Friday. And yeah, I just like talking K-State sports. I love talking Big 12. I love talking college sports as well. So, at Scott Wildcat is my personal Twitter account. A lot of Iowa State fans have me blocked from my younger years of being a Twitter troll. I am in my mid-30s, so I've calmed down quite a bit.
So, I mean, I'm 32, so yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so if you guys, if anyone's blocked me, you can feel free to unblock me. I probably will not troll as much as I used to. So if you want to go back and forth on Twitter, at Scott Wildcat, at Bosco's Boys. So thank you guys so much for having me on.
Yeah, I've gone back and forth with you on Twitter, so I mean,
oh man, I don't know if I want to go back and see our interactions.
Nah, Scott, I know you're going to Ireland, so I'll hit you up and then we'll have a pint together.
Perfect, so. Man. I'm looking forward to it.
Sweet.
I hope you guys make like some sort of bet. I don't know what bet you guys would make, but
it's
I do not bet on K-State.
We ain't making no damn bets.
That is just not. Not something
that's not
I
the
do.
Bet I was talking about. I'm talking one between you two, like with a forfeit or something.
No, hell no.
No, I mean maybe we'll do a pint chug off, and the loser has to buy the next one. You know, that's the only.
That's
bet
fine
I'm
with me.
To
make. We'll do that. I can do
there
that.
There you go. There you go.
All right. A few things before we go. Just some podcast things for us. Believe in Iowa State podcast is a top 15 sports pet. Sports podcast in the state of Iowa and a top 40 most listened to podcast in the state of Iowa. So thank you, state of Iowa listeners. You can find Cody on Twitter at Matt Campbell Impersonator. Cody, what are you talking about these days?
Well, mostly talking about like the volleyball squad, the Houston Texans, and a little bit of a Cy-Hawk trolling. Yeah. And also something new out of Clemson that makes me question our AD, like we mentioned earlier, because Clemson's now selling alcohol at football.
Thanks, Brandon Murphy. Thanks a lot. You can find me on Twitter at SciTieGuy. I'm talking about the White Sox. They're in the rebuild, but it's promising. Talking about how the Cowboys are going to disappoint me once again, and also seeing how Florida's going to do, since that's the team I grew up cheering for. But yeah, but Scott, we actually came up on our 100th episode. We've been doing this for a year now.
Hey, congrats, man.
Yeah. So, you know, I saw what you were doing like that. I'm like, man, if I have the wherewithal to get to 1,000 episodes, that would be absolutely amazing. But just, you know, looking up to you like that and just continuing to put the work in. But thank you, everybody, for tuning in to the Believe in Iowa State podcast. For Tyler Carter.
For Cody Vanciello.
This is the Believe in Iowa State podcast. Roll clones, baby.
Go Cyclones.
1 second. I got to figure out something. Hold on.
Still says we're live. If anyone's watching live right now, hello.
Welcome to the Sicko Hour.
Yeah. Well,
welcome to Sicko Committees.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the Sicko Hour.